And stay in Psalm 105. We'll end up in Genesis 39. Talk about shalom today. Shalom means peace. As a greeting, it's like going up to somebody and saying, "How are you doing?" But you're asking about their well-being. You're saying, "How are your relationships? How's the harmony in your household?" Both in terms of, you think about your horizontal relationships, you and your fellow man, but also your vertical relationship too. How's your shalom between you and God? The stories of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and today we're going to skip ahead to the story of Joseph, are stories of their relationships that are drawn into harmony. Now, God created us all to be instruments of harmony and of praise, and it's only by His grace and His power that we can be tuned so that we actually sound good together, so that we, when our notes are played in unison, it is a harmony. So we've been studying the story of God, wholly fulfilling His perfect will, wholly fulfilling His perfect will through the imperfect instruments of His patriarchs. I hope that's come out in our study of Joseph, is that our study of Abraham and Isaac and the patriarchs, is that none of these men and women are perfect instruments, and yet God's perfect will is brought to pass through them. We'll look today at how Joseph is able to accept the peace that God gives him, because his life is pretty wild in Genesis 39. So Psalm 105 takes portions of the story in Genesis, and it's like setting the story to music, right? It's almost like a Johnny Cash bit, you know, and that's what everyone loved him for, was setting stories to music. This is slightly better than something Cash would have written, I'm sure. But notice what it says here about Joseph. He had sent a man ahead of them, Joseph. And it says, the word of the Lord tested Joseph, and it also brought God's will to pass. For those who were here last week, we talked about the story of Isaac. And the story of Isaac and Rebekah was very much a story about a man finding harmony by finding a godly wife. And that's much of the story that many of us will experience or have experienced, is finding a spouse, finding harmony within our home, and hopefully that's in the setting of a godly home. But I also think about Matthew 19, and there's a rich young ruler, or a rich young man that Jesus calls to, and he calls to this man who has lots of money and has been righteous in many ways, and he tells him to sell and to give and to come. Now, I don't know if the man in Matthew 19 was unattached, right? If he had if he had a bell or not, that he was courting or if he was married. I don't know that. But just think, if Jesus told him, sell everything, give it to the poor, come and follow me, at that place in his life, if he wasn't attached to a family, I mean, how providential would that be? To be called at this time in your life when you are available. What awesome thing could that young man have done had he followed the request of Jesus? And I want to look at Joseph as what could have happened, and yet it happened before. Joseph is a young man. He's placed in a position of power. He's got many resources. And yet over and over again, God, through the actions of history, tells Joseph, come and give up and serve me and follow me. Our religion is kind of a paradox like that, the Christian religion, because it's rooted in family and it's rooted in making families whole and in making moms and dads and husbands and wives able to raise children. And we're very much a family-based religion and faith. And yet, our founder, Jesus Christ, was an unmarried man who never left any children behind. Turn over with me to 1 Corinthians 7 for just a moment. 1 Corinthians 7 is a challenging passage, but Paul's fairly clear here. Paul, again, at this time, is a single man, and he's pondering all the ways that he's able to serve God because his anxieties aren't divided. in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 9, we're going to start in verse 7. He says, I wish that all were as myself, but each has his own gift from God. All right, this isn't a command necessarily. He's saying, but if everyone, I wish they were like me, for it is better, let's go on here to verse 8, to the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. And then turn over to verse 32. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man, and we're thinking about Joseph in this respect, even though he later on is married in his life, at this time in his life, he's unmarried. He says, the unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord and how to please the Lord. The married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife. Now, that's not a bad thing, right, in and of itself. Verse 34, and his interests are divided. And the married or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things and how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. Our religion really is a paradox, because there is a place for those who are committed to family and those who are solely committed to the Lord. Both kinds of love and devotion are acceptable. But I want us to focus on Joseph, whose anxieties at this time in his life are undivided. I want to look at how he allows God to bring peace into his life, how he is sort of a rich young man of sorts who can be anxious about the things of God. Joseph's name means may he add, or God will add. It came from his mother, Rachel. Rachel gave birth to Joseph, and immediately she was thinking, may God add another child. You know what happens when she gets her other child? She dies in childbirth, giving birth to Benjamin. Nevertheless, God will add. Joseph's name is to trust in God. And I want to look at how he learns to trust, to be content in all circumstances. Let's go back to Genesis 39 and read the first part of this story together. Genesis 39, verse 1. Now, Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, and the captain of the guard, an Egyptian who had bought him from the Ishmaelites, who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house, put him in charge of all that he had. From the time he made him overseer in the house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. Because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food that he ate. You think about Joseph's circumstance, right? He was the favorite child of his father, and his brothers, you know, not thinking that was fair, despising that, overcompensated and said, we'll kill him. Well, maybe we won't kill him, but we'll send him into slavery. And we'll let Dad know we think he's dead. And so he's a slave. And you see in the text here, the emphasis in verse 1, that this is a man who is not coming according to his own will. He's being brought there by someone else. He's being sold. He's being bought. His will is very much being taken away. He's being robbed of his own will. And yet Moses wants to reassure us that even though Joseph isn't getting his way, that the Lord is very much in control. The Lord causes him to succeed. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. Verse 3, even Potiphar saw that the Lord was with him. You remember the beginning part of Joseph's life where he has these dreams and it shows that he is going to be king and he's going to be ruler over his brothers and even his mom and his dad, he's going to be ruler over them. How do you think he envisioned that coming about? I mean, he had a dream, but how do you think he dreamed about his dream coming true? He says, I know, I'd like to be sold into slavery. I'd like to have my will stolen from me. I'd like to be held at the mercy of an Egyptian who's a pagan. That's how I will become ruler over my family. I'm not sure that slavery was the ideal choice. But there's something about God adding peace into Joseph's life that he needs to learn, not my will, but yours be done. Even Joseph, I think, had to learn that lesson. For there to be peace, Joseph must learn to will and do the good of another. Think about that definition for love, the true or a classic definition of love, to will and to do the good of another person. And so he's sent into Potiphar's house, and he must now will and do what is good for this household. Verse 6, the end of verse 6. Now Joseph was handsome in form and in appearance, and he'd been given grand visions of being a ruler. And the text doesn't tell us what he was thinking, but I might be thinking, hey, why am I an overseer of one man's house when I am supposed to be a ruler? Why am I a manager when I'm supposed to be a king? And I don't know if he thought this, but could he have thought, hey, I'm single, and I'm young, and I'm handsome. What's the deal? What gives? And a timely temptation. You all know Potiphar's wife. You know the story of how she comes to him over and over again and says, lie with me. Come, be with me. I mean, think about that. This guy who, I mean, it says in Psalm that the Lord tested him by his word. And Joseph has the opportunity, you know, to have his ego tested. He should be greater, and yet he's in this mid-level management position. And he is incredibly handsome and charming and young, and yet has to learn that there are limits to that. What a timely temptation. And so whose will does he submit to? I mean, I know he submits to God's will, but notice how he phrases things here in verse 8 when he refuses the wife of Potiphar. Because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he's put everything that he has in my charge. It's like he has accepted the will of Potiphar. I'm not trying to make Potiphar out as some prophet incognito in disguise here, but he submits to the will of Potiphar as God has placed him there. It says, he is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. The will of Potiphar is that Joseph can have anything in his house except what? Except his wife. And notice the connection Joseph makes. He says, Potiphar's given me everything except his wife. And if I went to take his wife, it would be a sin against who? What's it say? Joseph doesn't say it would be a sin against Potiphar. He says it would be a sin against God. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? That's wild. That Potiphar's will and Potiphar's plan for Joseph and his submitting to that, that by him upholding that, keeps him from sinning against God. Now, Potiphar's wife, I'm not sure she's really driven by will. It seems like she's more driven by her cravings. We're going to get a bit more into what she is. But he respects Potiphar's will and he honors God's righteousness. And sometimes the only manly thing to do in the face of wickedness is to flee, is to run. Amen. Joseph's a real man because he runs away. And in running away, he honors Potiphar, and he also protects this woman who really has no interest in protecting her own value. Joseph is called out of his home into Egypt, and he is able to display love to this home. He's able to protect this home against itself. All because he gave up his will and his desires and his cravings to honor his boss and to love God and his righteousness. Do you think anyone had ever said no to Potiphar's wife before? I mean, we're not told. But aren't you glad Joseph did? That he did the manly thing, not only in fleeing from wickedness, but in protecting this woman who couldn't protect herself. I mean, that's manhood, right? You run away from evil and you protect those who can't protect themselves. We love Joseph for that. But what's the cost of him rejecting Potiphar's wife's advance? Did you catch what he said there between verses 7 and 10? How much does Joseph have in his control? I mean, he's a slave, and yet he has been given more than nearly any Egyptian in the entire kingdom. Now, you might say, well, he had oversight, but he didn't really have possession, right? He wasn't free to do whatever he wanted to do. He certainly wasn't free to self-indulge. He certainly wasn't free to be self-centered. But any of us, I'm included, who are coming out of that life, know that self-indulgence is only a fool's form of freedom. The true freedom is in giving yourself and in self-restraint. And if we think about the things that we own, because we like to say, yeah, I own a house and I own a car and I own these things, but aren't we all stewards anyway? I mean, who owns most of our homes? You know, or at least 80% of most of our homes, or maybe 50%. I mean, the bank does, right? How about 50 years from now? I'm not going to be owning the home I have now in a few months, hopefully. But any of us, 50 years from now, who's going to own the home that you live in now? And how about the wealth that you have? In 100 years, who is going to be spending your wealth? We truly are all stewards, like Joseph, of what has been given to us. And in rejecting Potiphar's wife, Joseph is choosing to have less. The first aspect of accepting God's peace was to desire another's will over ourselves. This one is to make the choice to have less rather than more and choose to retain the freedom to live with less. Philippians 4, turn over to Philippians chapter 4 because Paul puts this so well. Philippians 4, verse 11. Keep in mind, in verse 13 is that verse, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. This is what Paul is talking about. And this is what Joseph is living out. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned, in whatever situation I am, to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, of abundance and need. See, peace so much is rooted not in clinging to possessions or things, but in being in harmony with God and, as far as we can do, with our fellow man. Not that we can't accept, because Joseph accepts when things are given to him, when blessings are brought into his life, but he doesn't cling to those things. Proverbs 21 has two passages here, and you could fit Potiphar and Joseph in these passages. Proverbs 21, verse 9 says, "It's better to live in a corner of the housetop, or in an Egyptian jail, than in the house shared with a quarrelsome wife." I mean, who's the richer man? Potiphar or Joseph? Potiphar has all of these things, and yet he literally lives in the household with a quarrelsome wife who is unfaithful to him. Go over to Proverbs 21, verse 19. "It is better to live in a desert land or an Egyptian prison than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman." Peace is rooted in harmony with God and man and not in clinging to possessions. Let's go down to verse 11 in Genesis 39. Think about this last idea of always seeking the lowest position. And maybe when Joseph first came to the house, in Potiphar's wife's mind, maybe she thought, oh, he's handsome. She elevated him. She thought he's handsome and he's capable. And maybe she did honor him to an extent. But how fickle is the honor of men? Verse 12, she caught him by his garment and said, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said, now she throws both men under the bus here. See, he, my husband, has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside and fled and got out of his house. So to the servants, she throws her husband. Maybe she honored him, but now that's not convenient. So she throws him under the bus and said it's his fault. And then Joseph comes in and rejects her, and she says, well, he's just a Hebrew, and he came to mock me and to laugh at me. Then her husband comes home in verse 17, and she tells him a story. The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to laugh at me, but as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house. Honor, to honor somebody is to lift them, right? And to elevate them. And Potiphar's wife is fickle in her bestowing of honor. But even Potiphar, I mean, what should Potiphar do to Joseph right now? Joseph should be dead. And so it tells me that in Potiphar's mind, man, I like this guy, and my wife's at it again. I should kill him, but instead we'll just send him to prison where I won't have to deal with him again. Isn't that the way it is? I mean, in one moment, in the eyes of somebody, you're the hero, and the next moment, you've fallen off that pedestal. The honor in the eyes of man is so fickle. And I think it's why Jesus, one of his favorite ideas illustrated in this saying here comes from Luke 17. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Jesus lived that life, right? He came here, and even at his birth, he came humbly, and it was always other people who were exalting him and lifting him up. Joseph doesn't have to reach and grab for power and position. As long as he keeps living an honorable life, he will remain honorable in God's sight. Another thought about this. In Jesus' view, life was often like being the guest at a wedding. Now, who's supposed to be the one honored at a wedding? Right? It's who is it? It's the bride, right? You're going there, and she's in the white dress. Oh, yeah, and the guy, right, who is the excuse to have the whole affair. No. The bride, and so often in life we go and we sort of have this attitude that, yeah, I should go and people should recognize who I am, when that's not at all how you go to a wedding unless it's your wedding. You know, we have the unwritten rule among women, what don't you wear to a wedding? You don't wear white, right? It's the bride's day. And so say you walk in and there's the beautiful table of the wedding party and you're not in the wedding party. And what happens when you sit down at that table? Jesus uses this in this parable. What happens if you sit down and you're not invited? He says, somebody's going to come to you and they're going to put their hand on your shoulder and say, you sit over here. And how embarrassing is that? And yet say you go and you're part of the wedding party, but for some reason you're not really thinking you belong there. And yet the groom comes and he grabs you and he says, no, brother, you come up here. You're my best man. You belong at this table. Honor is not taken, but when we live it out, God will elevate us. And that happens. Verse 19, as soon as his master heard these words that his wife spoken to him, he said, this is the way your servant has treated me, his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph. I mean, you just can't keep a good man down, can you? The Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. It wasn't long before the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Godliness is beyond a title, but it is to the one who wills and does the good of another. And the part we sometimes forget in Jesus' parable is when the person comes to you and brings you up to honor you in that seat, then you accept that. Shalom, peace. How does peace come into Potiphar's home? Peace comes to his home in a man who is unattached, who is a future ruler, and who takes this time in his life to accept the peace that God would give him. An imperfect man who wholly fulfills God's perfect will, who is anxious about the things of God. He desires the will of another. Whose will might I more fully desire? If we think that my way of doing things is the only way God can accomplish things, that makes for a very unpeaceful life. Whose will might I more desire? And you have to live that out without the eye roll, right? I love you, and then you roll your eyes, right? Doing the will, desiring the will of another with joy. By choosing less, he made the choice to have less rather than more. Am I clinging to things, or am I craving more when I could choose to live with less? And Joseph, he accepts the lowest position, but you'd think after a while he'd start to think, okay, this is too good right now, God. I'm just going to seek the lowest position and trust you. Do I seek the lowest position of service, and do I allow God to be the one who promotes? May God's perfect will be wholly fulfilled in us, and may we be at peace with him and with one another. I'm going to read Numbers 6, and after I read that, then we can all stand and sing together. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.